It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
This is Cleveland's Team, a baseball history podcast. A regular look back at professional baseball in Cleveland from 1901 and beyond. Now, here's your host, Guardians team historian, Jeremy Fedor.
I guess just kind of starting at the beginning of everything, what drew you to baseball? Were you a multi-sport athlete, or did baseball stick out for one reason or another?
Yeah, I grew up, my dad's a Navy chaplain, so we've been around a lot of different places, but my dad had three tours in the Southern California area, and that's so 10 years old all the way through college, I grew up in the San Diego area. So I was multi-sport. Sports, I played football, basketball, and baseball for 4 years in high school, 2 years of college football, and finally I got the UCLA scholarship offer in 69 for my junior, senior year, and I went to UCLA, but only went there 1 year before I signed. Yeah.
And, you know, that leads me to my next question. You know, you go to your baseball reference page, and it mentions you were drafted twice by the Reds, first in the 31st round and then in the second round. You know, was college the reason that you didn't want to sign, or do you think you could get to that first round selection, or was there?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, the bonus, the bonus in those days wasn't like they are now, but I was still playing football and I had that going and I felt like, college experience was just as important as playing in the minor leagues. So I didn't sign the second time with the Reds. I know they were after me for both of those times. It was right out of high school in 66 and then 68 out of junior college. And like I said, I played 2 years of junior college football. So I had a lot going on with sports and school, and I just decided to stay in school at that time.
Now, flash forward a little bit, did you know you were on Cleveland's radar in terms of the draft, or was it just you just played and wherever the chips fell, you just went with?
No, here's what happened with Cleveland. Okay, so after the 69 season, in 69, I must have played 120 some games. I was at UCLA. I went to Alaska and played in the NBC summer league up there in Alaska, Anchorage. And then we played in that tournament in Wichita, which is a National Baseball Congress. Played that tournament. We won the tournament. By the way, the UCLA Bruins, we went to the College World Series, all that. So a lot happened in 69. And that was my junior year and I was at UCLA. And so when the season ended, the summer ended, I decided to drop out of UCLA and made myself eligible for a January draft. In those days, they had a January draft. And because I was really pretty hot stuff at that time, I was, you know, as you say, the Reds had wanted me, and now I had this great year in 69. So when January came around, the two last place teams were Cleveland and San Diego. Ironically, San Diego, by the way. And they literally, and I wrote postcards to every team to let them know I was eligible in that 70 draft. So those two teams flipped a coin for the number one draft, and it came out to be Cleveland. And ironically, had it been San Diego, you know, I grew up in San Diego, and not only that, their AAA club was in Hawaii, which my dad had just been stationed in Pearl Harbor in Hawaii. So I could have played AAA in Hawaii had San Diego drafted me. But anyway, Cleveland drafted me. So I know this is a long story, but this is all true. Cleveland drafts me, and I go to spring training, and because I was number one draft choice, and I was like 3 years of college ball, they let me work out with a AAA club, and I hit real well in spring, and I made the AAA club. I was also exposed to the Uncle Sam's draft because I dropped out of school. I lost my 2S. So they had that lottery system going at that time. And I joined the Air National Guard. I made the club, and the team happened to be Wichita, which is AAA club for the Indians at the time. This was 1970. And I went to Wichita and joined the Air National Guard and played that season in Wichita.
Did that weigh on you, the National Guard aspect? I mean, I can't imagine guys nowadays balancing both of those. And that was somewhat common, I think. I've talked to a few individuals. I think Ray Fossey was a similar situation. Was that something that kind of weighed on you in terms of you want to pursue baseball? But like you said, Uncle Sam is also talking.
Oh, it was, it was, to me, it was a godsend for all of us because we were able to play ball and still be serving our country. Because as you know, they do the weekends. You do 2 days every month, and then they do have a 2 week active duty thing, but they deferred it until the winter time. So I was able to play the season. In other words, I played all my games, and if I missed a day, it was just because I had to attend a weekend session, but as long as I put 2 days in every month, I served my country that. So the National Guard was a real good outlet for a lot of us to continue to play and not have to miss those years, because that was a six-year deal. You get drafted, it'd be 2 years, I guess, but the 6 years wasn't that hard. It was really a lot of fun. I became a firefighter and I did a lot of work in the off season, with that.
Now, nowadays, the draft is this big deal. You have TV, the MLB Network, everyone's showing all the stuff, and the players are at home with their family. Did you just get a phone call? How does that work? Do you remember who called you? What they said? Or
yeah, that's a good question. You're right. It wasn't anything spectacular. It was basically a phone call. I didn't have an agent at that time, and so I think they just called me. I was talking to my dad or something, but it wasn't anything ceremonial like they have now. But I was number one draft choice in January.
And did Cleveland bring you up to the old stadium at all, like right away, or was it just? I mean, nowadays again, the first draft pick comes up, they get pictures and see batting practice. Was that something you got to do, or not really?
Mainly because I didn't draft, if I went through the June draft, that would have been going on because they're playing. This was in the wintertime. This was like January, when I was drafted. So there was no, nothing going to Cleveland. It would have been snowing at around that time. So no, I wasn't brought to the stadium that I remember. I just remember going to spring training, which was the biggest honor was to allow me to work out with the AAA club.
Was there anyone when you got the spring training that you'd say took you under their wing or really kind of helped you get acclimated to professional baseball?
Let's see. Not really. We had this was way back when. The first hotel room I stayed in, there were four of us in the same hotel room. You know, they did the bunk beds in the room, and so I think I wore number 100 and forgot what number that was. It was in the hundreds, and I was in part of spring training, but I was, you know, I was with the AAA group, and that was really pretty nice. But no, there wasn't anybody special there. Later on, my manager was Ken Aspromonte when I got there, and he became the manager in Cleveland when I made it to the big leagues. So Aspro was a big part of my getting involved with baseball at that time. I got to meet Larry Doby and I got to meet Rocky Colavito when I made the big leagues. So there was a lot of influences there with the Indians.
And actually leads me to my next question. I do want to talk about Ken a little bit later on, but you know, I think we have this tendency to think of history as so long ago and, you know, whatever, black and white, but for you, you're getting into baseball. I mean, 11 or was it 14 years after Jackie's last at bat, 11 years after Larry's last at bat. I mean, what was that? What did Jackie and Larry mean to you, you know, as a player and as a person, just what these guys did? And you mentioned you got to meet Larry. I mean, do you remember what that was like?
Yeah, you know, it was great. You know, he was real pleasant to me, as a lot of the former Indian players were. You know, I met, like I said, Rocky Colavito was coaching with us also. But, you know, it's really what my answer is pretty much fast forward to what I understood and met a lot of the players. I didn't get to meet Jackie. I did meet Larry Doby, but to understand what they went through, they saved me a lot of headache. I mean, those players, is not just those are two guys, but I got to meet a bunch of other players, black players that played in the 60s that went through stuff that I didn't have to go through. And I'm very fortunate and I'm very grateful for what they've done. I met a lot of them over the years, Bill White, you know, Bob Gibson. Those stories are unbelievable because some of those guys played double A or single A ball in the South, you know, during that time. You know, I played triple A ball in Wichita and didn't have any issues there, but I can imagine had I been in Alabama somewhere at A ball, you know, what I might have had to go through. And I know that those players went through all that to save me from getting too much of that.
And I'm kind of curious what the, you know, when you get up to Cleveland, what that clubhouse was like. I mean, that era, you know, I read online, in 1975, 27% of players were black. Now, you know, I think we're at 7%. So you had other black teammates. Was that, you know, was everyone pretty much, you know, intermeshed in the clubhouse? I mean, was it a pretty easygoing situation, or how did that?
Absolutely. That was huge for me. My teammate mentors were Vince Colbert, Ted Ford, Frank Baker, but let's see, Vada Pinson was on our team. Roy Foster. I don't know if you remember Roy Foster, but those in those days, when, you know, we had roommates and, you know, it's almost unheard of to have a white roommate. So all my roommates were black guys, and we got along very well. It was really a good camaraderie. Those are the guys that brought me up in the game.
And when you came up to Cleveland, you know, do you remember, you know, where you live? Was there an active black community that you were a part of, or was it just you were playing baseball and that was your life and you kind of just?
Yeah, most of that was the guys on the team. You know, we spent a lot of time with the guys on the team. You know, we loved to play cards and stuff, and we had a lot of fun together. And so when we go on the road, we're always after games, before game, we're playing cards and talking stuff. It was really a lot of fun. But I got married in Cleveland, and we did live, our first apartment was in the Shaker Heights area. And so but I got traded. We got traded right almost after we got married. So,
yeah, we'll get to that trade in a minute too. Do you remember your call up? Then, you know, your first game was in Chicago, but do you remember the stadium on the lake and playing out there? And they weren't very good teams, I guess, to put it lightly. Right. Do you remember coming up and just how was it overwhelming? Was it? I mean, that was a big cavernous ballpark with not a lot of people in the seats sometimes.
That's true. Maybe I'm wrong. Was my first game in Chicago though? We were at Comiskey Park, I think. And I was brought up and I didn't play the first day or something, but the next day my first at bat was a pinch hit. I got up to bat and pinch hit. I think I grounded out or something. And then the next day was my first start or something. I think I got a hit or two that day, but the stadiums were just, it was unbelievable. And yes, playing in Cleveland and there's like 20,000 fans there and the stadium holds like 80. It was really like playing in a desert or something, but anyway, we had a lot of good guys on the team. I remember all the teammates. You're right, Ray Fossey was there. Ken Suarez. There's a lot of group of guys that I remember. Nettles was playing third, as you know. And so we had a fun group of guys. I got to know them real well. We did not win a lot of games, you're right. But I still had a lot of fun. And it was a privilege to be in the big leagues.
Did that weigh on you not being on a great team, or do you just want to play baseball? I mean, you went through a manager change your first year when Alvin Dark ended up being let go and Johnny Lapone coming to be manager. Was that, you know, are you just kind of wide-eyed kid playing Major League Baseball?
Yeah, really. That's really what it was. I wasn't worried about, you know, when you want to win. Obviously, you want to win all the time, but it didn't weigh on me at all about our success. I was playing all the time and I was just getting acclimated. I wasn't any great power hitter at that time, but I was putting the bat on the ball and having some decent averages. So, but our team started changing over the years. You referred to a lot of the things that went on. Fossey's trade, they traded for Gaylord. A lot of things happened during those years. And, we got a little bit better. We got to start getting a little bit better hitting club, you know, the Nettles trade. And then of course I got traded away, but there were a lot of changes that were made during the years I was there.
And, you know, you mentioned, Ken Aspromonte, and, you know, you had your success in the minor leagues and with him, and when he was named manager, was that pretty exciting for you then? I mean, you had to be, it's a known entity. So I imagine that helps a lot.
It really was. Ken was a great influence for me in the minors, and it was great to see him back up in the big leagues. And we had a sad day actually, because he was the one who had to tell me I got traded, and that would happen in April of 74, and so it was tough leaving him. But he was a good man, and I learned a lot from him.
What kind of manager, you know, was he? Was he like a rah-rah kind of guy, or was he just kind of one of those quiet, let the players do what they needed to do? Or what do you recall from his time?
Yeah, Aspro was a understated, I guess. You know, he wasn't you never saw him getting loud or anything. He was very subdued, a very strong, strong and quiet. In the Joe Torre kind of thing, you know, Joe Torre's like that. They're quiet, very strong, but they always have your back, and that's something you really appreciate and remember.
And did any of those guys from those Cleveland years become lifelong friends, or just you've met so many people that it, you know, you kind of had acquaintances throughout, but anyone you still talk to?
Sort of. A lot's happened over the years. One of the real close friends that I had with those years was Oscar Gamble, you know, and Oscar passed away some years ago. He and I were real close. I got real close with Charlie Spikes, because Charlie had, you know, he got traded. He was in the Nettles trade, and Charlie and I played together with Cleveland. But then he came to when I in the 80s, I went to the Braves, and Charlie became a player on that team, and we were close during those times. We haven't talked to him in a long time, but and that's true of a lot of baseball friends. You know, you don't talk to them for a long time, but you know, one time you see them, you know, it's be back like the old days. You know,
I do want to then. So I was looking at the newspaper from your when you were traded, and it mentioned you guys had just gotten off the field. You beat the Angels. Nolan Ryan was pitching. I think you had a big hit, and you know, Espermonte kind of told you to hold back when you were going to go, you know, take a shower or something like that. Do you remember, you know, that moment, that day? I mean, were you even aware that you were on the trading block?
No, not at all. The trade was a complete surprise. But you're right about that evening. We were two runs down with the bases loaded. I think it was the eighth inning, and I'm facing Nolan Ryan, and I hit a line drive to left. You know, Nolan Ryan threw hard, as you know. I hit a line drive to left field, and it was a double, and it cleared the bases. And it was like in the clubhouse, it was like we won the World Series or something, because it was real exciting finish. And you're right. Aspro took me, Dick Titro, and Cecil Upshaw into his office, and he was, you know, he was, you could see it on his face, you know, because, you know, he had been with me in the minor leagues and everything, and then we were traded. So we're talking. This was a Friday night. The Saturday morning, I'm in a Yankee uniform at Shea Stadium. So it was a quick turnaround, and it was a complete surprise. I had no idea I was going to be traded.
Do you think it helps getting your start in Cleveland and then going to New York, kind of getting your feet wet versus just getting in New York as a professional player? Or am I just making that up? I'm just kind of curious from a player's perspective, because New York's a different animal than Cleveland, even today as it is then. Did that,
no doubt.
That help at all? Or was it just kind of, hey, it's baseball is baseball?
Yeah, I really think that didn't make that a big of a difference. The idea of playing in a big leagues, period, in Cleveland prepared me for what happened in New York for sure, because as you know, we played in Yankee Stadium. We played in the old Yankee Stadium. So I think the years in Cleveland were very helpful for me coming to New York. As you know, the fanfare of what New York became wasn't going on when I got traded. You know, we were in Shea Stadium. They hadn't been winning either. They weren't, you know. And so it was a situation where it was the next couple of years when we moved into Yankee Stadium, and after they refurbished it, where things started really getting exciting. And certainly the experiences I had with Cleveland helped me, you know, to cope with all that.
Was there any, you know, bitterness or resentment at the franchise, or was it more just, hey, this is a business, it happens and you move on? Or when you came back to Cleveland, you hoped to hit four home runs and 10 RBIs?
No, I never had those kind of feelings. But one key person that had responsible for both Nettles trade and my trade was Gabe Paul. Gabe Paul was my GM when I was with Cleveland, and as you know, he went over to the Yankees. I think, if I'm not mistaken, he made the Nettles trade as a Cleveland GM, but then he made my trade as a Yankee GM. I think I'm right about that. And so, so when I went to New York, you know, Gabe was there, and so he was kind of in the background because he had made that trade for me. So I didn't hate anybody in Cleveland or nothing like that. My wife and I were surprised, you know, we were just a year out of marriage, and so it was just a change, and we coped with it.
And I guess one thing I kind of want to touch on too is, you know, you're out of Cleveland, you're in New York, but I imagine, you know, it's baseball. You still have your finger on the pulse of all that. And your old manager, Ken Espermonte, is replaced by Frank Robinson. I mean, what from a, you know, your distance, I guess, at the time, what was that like for you? I'm sure there was mixed feelings, you know, for Ken, but, you know, seeing Frank get in there must've been an exciting time as well?
Oh, that was a monumental moment for all of us. Cause you know, that was Jackie's dream, you know, is to get that, you know, have a black man managing. So, and it turned out that wasn't opening day was against us. I'm playing first base for the Yankees when, you know, Frank played his first game there. And if I remember, his first at bat was a home run. So that was really a thrill to see that. And I was really proud of the moment. It was great.
Did you get to know Frank well at all? I mean, we had him here for a statue unveiling. Seemed like a pleasant guy to talk to. I don't know if you ever had a chance to. I mean, one of the greatest players of all time, Frank Robinson. Did you have a chance to meet him?
Spoke to Frank many times over the years. Yeah, we were never were on the same. I never played for him or anything like that, or teammates. But I over the years, yes, I've seen him, talked to him many times. I remember calling him for some advice a couple of times. Yes, he's businesslike. He's everything about Frank was business, and you could see that in you know, when he managed his clubs. He's very, very tough with discipline on his teams. So, but I never played for him, but I did get to talk to him quite a bit over the years.
Now, I guess more lighthearted questions. Who as a player, what pitcher was your least favorite to go up against? Was there anyone that when they were on the mound, you were just like, I'll be lucky to scratch out a hit today?
Yeah. That guy was Vida Blue. Vida, in those years, you remember he was with Oakland. And I believe he had a season where he was Cy Young and most valuable player. He was really some kind of a hard throwing left-hand pitcher. And even though I played and did decent against lefties over the years, Vida Blue was really a tough component. I mean, he threw the ball as hard as anybody, and a great athlete on the field. So I didn't like facing him.
Yeah, that same year he won Cy Young and won Rookie of the Year, MVP. It was the same year you won MVP. Rookie of the Year. I'd be remiss not to talk about that. I mean, what a great year. I mean, Fergie Jenkins was the NL Cy Young, and Vida was the Cy Young and MVP. And the NL Rookie of the Year is Earl Williams and you. Yep. And, that had to be pretty cool to see, you know, that many black baseball players succeeding, but also for you to win Rookie of the Year. Do you remember, you know, getting that call? Or again, the fanfare from then to now is 100% different. There's no, you know, half hour TV show running through all that stuff. So was it just a phone call or Ken telling you? Or actually, it wouldn't have been Ken at the time. It would have been.
Let's see. It would have been, but it wasn't Alvin Dark who called me either. I forgot how I learned, but it was a phone call. I remember. I still have the award. It was called at that time. It was called the Ford Frick, Ford Frick Award, something like that. And I still have the plaque. But this was years ago. I forgot how it was told. But I know what you mean. Did I go to New York? Sometimes they have a ceremony in New York where they introduce you like that. But I don't remember doing that either. So there wasn't any big fanfare at that time.
And going back in time again, did that creep into your head during the season? Like, I have a shot to win this award, or is that just, again, one of those things? You're playing baseball and that's it.
Yeah, I had no idea. No, I didn't. It wasn't like that. Even, you know, I'm asked that a lot when I was an amateur in college. You know, did I want to play baseball my whole life? I really didn't have that in my mind because I was playing other sports. But no, during the season of, with Cleveland, when I brought up in 71, I had no idea about winning an award or anything like that. I just played every day and just tried to get better.
And, you know, just, I guess, general reflections on a life in baseball, because, you know, you play, you had coaching gigs, you spent so much time in baseball. What, you know, looking at it now, you know, the course of your career, I mean, I don't know, your time in Cleveland, obviously your New York time is well known, but what's takeaway? It's a loaded question. I know it's there's not really an easy answer, but you know, looking back at it now, I don't know how you sum up a career like that, but any big reflections or takeaways now that you've had time to kind of think about your life in baseball?
Yeah, well, I hear what you're saying. Obviously, from an individual standpoint, my big year, of course, was 76. So I hit the home run and put the Yankees in the World Series and all that. That was a really big thrill and a privilege to be a part of that. And I know, you know, you're reflecting on Jackie Robinson, and I couldn't be more disappointed at the number of Black players that are out there now compared to, like you said it earlier. What was that percentage? 17?
Right now it's like 7-8% of
8%. And,
yeah.
And it was how many percents when I played?
1975, it was 27%.
27, you know, you're right. And I think I remember the, was it the Pittsburgh Pirates that had an all Black team on the field, nine players. So I think might have a couple of Hispanics, but I mean, I'm just disappointed that those numbers aren't better today. And I know a lot of guys, especially a lot of former players, are working hard at teaching the youth the game. But it's just not the same. And I know the in back in those days, you know, I know the Negro Leagues was not in existence when I played, but the remnants of what that was like, you know, was a real source of pride in the Black community, having the Negro Leagues. And you know, when integration happened with Jackie and a lot of other players, you know, it caused the Negro Leagues to fold and not be in existence anymore. And I think that was really a hurtful thing, because that made it right in the community when that leg was gone. So it's not the same anymore.
And I guess too, and I don't know if this is something that you would remember or have thought about at the time, but did you feel any sort of, you know, the story is when Branch Rickey spoke to Jackie, he told him, like, you know, you have to be able to turn the other cheek. You have to be able to, you know, deal with this. Was there any sense of that when you were playing, or do you feel like you could be totally yourself and just be, you know, the player you wanted to be?
No, my career, thanks to, a lot of Black players that went through a lot of things that I didn't have to go through. But no, I didn't have that kind of speech to me. I was never called names on the field or anything like that. But I'm grateful for that, but no, that never happened to me. But I was so proud that so many players were around. You know, there was a lot of guys around during that time. There's not so many now.
Yeah, and you mentioned meeting Larry Doby. That's one guy I wish I could go back and have a cup of coffee with. And, you know, I just don't think that, you know, it's you know, everyone's always bringing up Larry in terms of Jackie gets, you know, a lot of attention, rightfully so. But Larry also had to deal with a lot. And, you know, I, as a Clevelander and as a Cleveland fan, you know, I think Larry should get a lot more attention as well. And, you know, I think it's cool. You got to have a chat with him and be around him, because, you know, I never had a chance to meet him. So I didn't know if you had any other, you know, reminiscences of Larry or any other, you know, reflections.
Yeah, I'm so proud. I got to wear his number. I wore 14 when I was with Cleveland. And so that was a real thrill. I had his number. I did meet him several times. He lived in New Jersey. I ended up moving to New Jersey when I became a Yankee. And so he lived there. But really, you're right about him. He was a wonderful person to be around and to talk to, and just so proud of what he did. It was so many Black players that went through that. You know, it wasn't like, you know, you talk about Jackie and Larry was the first in American League, but so many other players went through a lot of that.
And that's something I try to let people know, like, you know, just because Jackie and Larry did what they did, didn't make everything okay the next year. They were still
doing
stuff, like when Satchel came in the year after and so on and so forth. You mentioned wearing 14. Was that intentional, or is that just a happy coincidence that you got 14? And
I think it was a coincidence. I don't, you know, I don't remember the reason why I got that number. You know, you get to the big leagues and they just give you a uniform, you know, but I was given, ironically, was given 14. So later on, knowing that he wore that number, that was a thrill.
So you go from wearing 103 or whatever it was to 14. That's got to be pretty cool.
That's a true story. Yes.
So that kind of covers everything I wanted to ask. I don't know if there's anything about Cleveland, about your time here, or about just baseball in general that you'd like to, you know, get out there. Like I said, we get this out to our fans in various ways. And, you know, you're one of our rookie of the years. We don't have a lot of those in our history. So it's, you know, that's, I think, a huge point of a historic pride in our organization. And, you know, hopefully we have some more. We had 17 guys debut last year, but Kwan was close. He didn't, finished second or third in the voting. So we've been close with a few guys, but not since Sandy have we had another, rookie of the year. But I mean, have you always had the fond memories coming back to Cleveland when you were with other organizations, or was there?
Oh, yeah. You know, as you know, I coached a lot of years afterwards. So, when we were playing at the, you know, down on the lake down there, we were promised this new ballpark, you know, and it was rumored that we were going, oh, you get a new ballpark, going to be downtown. And as I got to see it, but it was after all those years that I was coaching, I think around the time we went into the stadium you're at. Now it's a beautiful stadium downtown now. And, but yeah, those years were, was really a thrill, and I guess going back to, you know, we got my wife and I got married in Cleveland, so that was a special time, and so we had our reception right at the end of the season, so we had a lot of the players be at our reception, so that was really wonderful. But as far as coming back there, you remember they used to honor it was me and Sandy, and it was a Charbonneau
and Herb Score.
And Herb Score, the four of us, they made plaques for us. And I still have that plaque. They did like a little cartoon thing on the pet. That was really an honor when they did that. So we were at that time, there was four rookie of the years with Cleveland. So. And I got to know Herb Score too. Oh boy, another wonderful person.
Any good stories about Herbie or anything you want to
share? Nothing really funny. He was just a wonderful guy. I got to know a lot of former players that were very, very nice to me. It's endless, the number I could name for you. There was a lot of them, but Herb was one of those wonderful people I got to know with Cleveland.
Was Feller around much in the 70s when you were around?
A little bit. Feller's, I'd run into him because he did a lot of exhibition stuff, and especially in the minor leagues. So I'd run into Bob when he did that. But I don't think he was working for the club at the time. I know Colavito was, but.
Anything with Rocky you want to chat about, or Rocky and fans also got traded and broke a lot of people's hearts. So
we all remember Rocky's arm. You know, Rocky had a cannon for an arm, and he used to throw batting practice to us. And you know, he was still throwing pretty good at that time. So, but I remember that. But learned a lot from him too over the years. He was great.
One of the coolest people I've met, or I was able to meet, was Mudcat Grant. Did you get to meet Mudcat
at all? Oh, man. Mudcat was a close friend. In fact, he had been with Cleveland before. He still had a house in Cleveland. And so I rented his house. I stayed in his house my first year when I was with Cleveland. So, and that was in the, I think it was in Shaker Heights somewhere. I can't remember, but it was a beautiful home, and that's where I got to stay when I came up to the big leagues. Mudcat Grant has been a good friend for a very long time over the years.
And Mike, I remember telling a story at, I think it was Larry Doby's statue unveiling, about, you know, being roommates, I think he was, with Larry towards the tail end of Larry's career, and just what that meant to him. And Mudcat had all the stories. He had some really great, I was talking to CC Sabathia a little bit online. He mentioned how much Mudcat was a, you know, just a great person. And, you know, again, such a institution of baseball that he was.
He kept the, he's got a group of guys, all the black aces, the guys that won 20 games, black play. And that was a group that he would have at his golf tournaments and stuff. And I know CC was part of that. That's a great group of guys.
Well, like I said, I could keep talking for hours. I think it's always fun to catch up, and like, everyone's got these great stories. And again, I mean, I'm only 36, but I feel like things are getting more distant from me. I mean, the 70s and 80s of baseball now, it's a different world than it is today. And this has been fascinating. And I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us.
You've been listening to Cleveland's Team, a baseball history podcast with Guardians team historian Jeremy Fedor.